Hello and good day, everyone. It's Kevin Finkel here, and this is another episode of the First Pioneers Podcast. This is a podcast all about the pioneer format of MTG, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm joined here by my co-host, Ryan, as well as a special guest. If you guys want to introduce yourselves.
My name is Ryan Schwenk, of course. Everybody knows me. I'm the cardboard samurai out of the Tokyo area of Japan, and our special guest, if you don't mind introducing yourself.
Of course. My name is Ashiok. I am Dreams of Ashiok, and yeah. This should be really exciting.
Yeah, I think everyone knows what it means when we've got a professional grinder on our podcast. It means that we're going to be talking about some competitive decks, something that's going on in the competitive world of Pioneer, which is something we always like to focus on. We like to keep you guys up to date, especially with this new season coming out. So this is kind of going to continue our series of taking deep dives on specific competitive decks. And the one that you've really brought to us today that you've been an expert on, that you've been having some success on, is the Mono Green Planeswalkers deck.
Yes.
So I'm going to kind of pass it to you to talk right out the gate, and we'll fire questions at you nonstop until you get bored of the deck.
Before that, can we just do like a quick, just hear a little bit more about his MTG background?
Sure.
Yeah, like, let's
how
go
long
ahead
have
and
you
do
been
that.
Playing?
I'm always straight to the point
with,
here.
with COVID originally, I used to be a really big grinder in paper with the Alberta area, but sadly, since COVID hit, I had to move to online, and there was a grace period of learning. I picked the worst possible way to learn Modo, which was Vintage Cube. Then I eventually found the deck Eldrazi-tron in around March, May area, around that time area. And then I just started grinding the weekly PTQs. I made a name for myself there. Then I started streaming because I thought streaming would be really fun. I became really big in that regard. And then eventually, once all of the blue cards became too unfair with Uro and whatnot, I switched over to Pioneer. And I thought Pioneer was a good break from Modern, and I still think it is. I think Pioneer is the escape of Modern's problems. Modern has a lot of problems right now. So here I am seeking refuge, and I've been playing Pioneer consistently for 5 months now.
I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, it's kind of been a funny thing. Pioneer has always been at its best when other formats are bad. So when Standard's bad, people go and run to Pioneer, or when Modern's bad, Pioneer looks great usually. And it's kind of a nice consistent oasis for other bad formats.
Yeah, and I kind of want to ask a little bit more about that as far as like what brought you to Pioneer. You know, we know that Uro's unfair and all that stuff. And blue cards in general are unfair in the older formats. So what kind of things kind of brought you to Pioneer?
My favorite kind of Magic is the games that take a lot of time and a lot of turns, and it really does feel like you have meaningful decisions, but I dislike free cards, if that makes a lot of sense. So cards like Force of Will turned me off of Legacy and Vintage entirely. Vintage is a turn one, it feels like a turn one format where if you go off turn one and there's a Force of Will from your opponent's side, you're just sitting there trying to recuperate while they have five cards in hand. Legacy, it's an Astrolabe format, or... it's a format with Force of Will again, so it's one of those ones where you kind of feel like you have to manage your resources in a different way. But with Pioneer, the way you get to manage it is like tapped out really does mean you're tapped out, and so you really have to manage whether or not you want to signify things versus not, or whether it's really more of an information game and you have the full knowledge rather than they could always have the free card. And that's what's really interesting to me. So like, yeah, I think that's basically really it.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kevin probably agrees too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I have the boomer ideology where if you're tapped out, that should signify something.
Yeah. So, I guess Pioneer's the only format where you leave four mana open consistently.
And, yeah. You get to see what that actually means. Like, you understand whether or not you have to play around Dispute, or you have to play around Censor,
or like a Collected Company, or Settle the Wreckage.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those formats that really, really rewards you for knowing a lot about the format. What's the main counter spells that you have to worry about? It's really rewarding for knowing the format pretty well.
So, Kevin, you wanted to jump into the topic now?
Oh yeah, I'm happy to jump into the deck list. So we're talking about mono green planeswalkers. So this is something that's been around for a little while. I'm going to quick run through your deck list real quick, just to kind of give an idea of what we're talking about. So I think a lot of this is, you know, maybe standard. Some of these things are not going to be unexpected. So for Elvish Mystic, four land war elves, I think that sounds standard in every deck. For Burning Tree Emissary, this one's running two Lunwar Visionary, three Voracious Hydra, and three Vorinclex Monstrous Raider. So that's really what we're excited about, talking about this as a change for the newest set. And then it also runs, of course, the Planeswalkers that the name deck is named after. So four Karn, four Vivian Arcbow Ranger, and three Nissa Who Shakes the World. And then it's powered up by four Oath of Nissa, four Wolf Willow Hollow, Haven. And then for lands, it's, you know, four Nykthos, Forests, and Kessel Garen Brig. And then the sideboard is mostly, looks like this one's almost entirely a wish board. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of these would be brought in. I'll definitely ask about that later. But it's a whole bunch of artifacts to find with Karn and creatures to find with Vivian. And where you can, you like to have a few that are creature and artifact. I don't know if there's any of those in here. Yeah, a couple of those.
Stonecoil, that's actually the only one.
Yeah, Stonecoil, there we go. No more Gearhulk or anything like that.
I used to be the other one. Gearhulk.
So should we focus like on the core cards? I mean, which of these cards are actually the core? Or maybe say which ones are actually kind of like, you know, negotiable? Are there any of these cards in your main deck that could be something else?
Sure. So the thing that's most negotiable about this deck is just some of your what are the deck's flex slots, right? And the flex slots are definitely Llanowar Visionary. That card has originally been like a Jade Light Ranger, a Scavenging Ooze, or other different cards. And the only thing that you can really play with is the number of things. So originally this list was running four Nissa Who Shakes the World and four Voracious Hydras, but I wanted to try Vorinclex for a challenge. I wanted to see how it would play out, and I've been doing a lot of deck testing beforehand, but I never really got to, so like the day of Kaldheim release, I was grinding tons of Pioneer, and 50% of the meta that I played against was auras. Different kinds of auras, but auras. And that matchup is atrocious, because they just go so big on one creature, and your only removal is Voracious Hydra. So I went into this challenge blind, and With the flex slots, it's really hard because this deck relies on having silver bullets. So you have to kind of figure out what your flex slots are. Very important. It's very important that you find out what your flex slots are. The cards that you can't really touch are any of the enchantments. Oath of Nissa as a 4-of. It's one of the ways that the deck has consistency. That card being unbanned made the deck really popular again. The Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic package, you can't touch those because, well, you always need something to play on turn one, and that's your Elvish Mystic Llanowar Elves. Burning Tree Emissary is what enables this deck to be a high roll deck because that's what it is at its core. It is trying to play something fast, play something powerful fast, and then create enough advantage to steamroll the rest of the game.
And then you get the Vivian as well to make your small mana dorks bigger later on.
Oh yeah, it helps with the game plan of steamrolling, which is like the biggest thing out of the deck, is you need to be able to steamroll and overwhelm your opponent with either Planeswalker value, Karn Silver Bullets, or the threat of a Yulamog with Vivian. This deck has like a couple of flex slots, but like there's nothing you really want. So the reason that we put Llanowar Visionary in the deck over like a Jade Light Ranger or Scavenging Ooze, it's a meta-dependent one. When you go into a blind meta, you want the best card on average, and drawing a card to draw you more powerful cards is the best card on average.
If that makes sense, I follow that.
Yes.
So in some ways, you do get a little bit of your flex slot ability in your sideboard is where we'll definitely
that's talk where the
because biggest, your sideboard's part of your main deck almost.
Yeah, that's the biggest flex.
I wanted to ask about consistency. So you're saying, you know, you know, Oath of Nissa really helped with the consistency, but you know, as far as hitting, you know, your big cards, how consistent has this deck been with that? You know, like your Nissa or Vivians or Karns or Vorinclex.
I would say it's like semi-consistent. So mulliganing with this deck, you only are really looking for either you will keep a hand that has like a turn one dork, but you also need to keep a hand that has some sort of payoff. So mulliganing, so you want to be able to see some sort of like way to get there and then any payoff. Because if you keep a hand without a payoff, you're dead in the water. Because then you're just hoping you top deck, which is never good with this deck. Because this deck runs I would say realistically 11 good threats, which are the planeswalkers, because Vorinclex isn't good on its own. It is a 6/6 trample haste, which is really powerful, don't get me wrong, but that dies to almost every single thing, and it if it dies, well, you're dead in the water. You have no follow-up, you have no advantage you're trying to create, and you have nothing. Sorry, what was the question again?
No, it's as far as, like, you know, the payoff cards, like,
yeah,
how consistent, you know.
Oh, consistency, yeah. Sorry. Woke up, I'm going to be a little bit all
Yeah,
all
so just to let everybody listening know at home, it's actually evening for me this time, and it's morning for both of these guys, so.
This is the time we figured it out. Consistency-wise, Bavanna and Mulligan really helped this deck out a lot. Because you do need to try to find a hand without Elvish Mystic to try to create that advantage, because playing a turn one extra land is really important to this deck. Because getting your threats out faster is... You're trying to cast a 4-mana or a 5-mana Planeswalker on turn 3. And that's just the entire thing, is you need to just try to find a way to do that consistently.
So
I would say it's pretty consistent.
I want to jump into the sideboard now. I think Kevin wanted to as well. So can you kind of go down the list and tell us when you'd be grabbing these and like in what situations?
Sure, of course. So Darksteel Citadel is there as your extra land. If you ever... So the deck is like a relatively low land count with 21, but it does have a lot of lands that produce extra things or a lot of ramps, so you can get away with it. But sometimes you're just always in top deck mode and... You just don't get a land sometimes, and you just need it for casting sometimes a God Pharaoh statue, which I'll talk about later, or a Nissa. It's just there as like one of your cute things to grab. One of my favorite interactions with Darksteel Citadel is Nissa Who Shakes the World, untapping it and making it a 3/3 indestructible, and then you just put all your counters on it with Vivian. It is the highest of value blockers, a 5/5 trample vigilance. Whew. Whew. That's hot.
Nice.
Stonecoil Serpent is something that you grab against the multicolored decks. So, like, for example, like Niv, or sometimes the Jeskai Luka deck you'll get against. Because it blocks Yorion infinitely. It blocks Uro infinitely. Omnath. Because this card has so much text. For some reason, it has reach. A lot of people don't realize that. It has reach.
Yeah.
It's also something that's really good with Vorinclex. So, a lot of the turns in this deck, you have a lot of mana with Nykthos. So I've cast at least 2 Vorinclex into Stonecoil Serpents for 10. I think that's at least doing a thing. The card is really good at pressuring Teferis. It's really good at pressuring Planeswalkers, because a lot of the Planeswalkers in this format are multicolored. For example, Teferi, Nahiri, both Teferis, I guess. So they can't remove it. They can't touch it.
Nice.
Tormod's Crypt, well, it's to get rid of Burrows. That's essentially it. And sometimes when you play against a rare Oops player, Oops has been a deck that's kind of pushed out of the meta right now. But you always got to respect it, and it's there. Same with Grafdigger's Cage. So actually, Grafdigger's Cage is technically not supposed to be in this deck. Funny story about Grafdigger's Cage in this current 75. I was playing against Fast Fake, who is a well-known Jeskai Luka player. And I originally had Weathered Runestone in my board. And the only difference on text from Grafdigger's Cage to Weathered Runestone is its non-land permanents can't enter from your library versus creatures and I think... Spells, what's the other one?
Creature cards.
I had Weathered Runestone in play, and he cast Transmogrify on my Vorinclex just as a removal spell, and I got an elf. So I realized that Transmogrify was bugged with Weathered Runestone, and so I made the change last second. Just because, like, Grafdigger's Cage is there for Transmogrify decks. Ooh. And for Graveyard Interact and Coco decks and whatnot. And so I was like, okay, it's the new card that's bugged, not Transmogrify. And so I put in a Grafdigger's Cage. Turns out it was Transmogrify that was bugged. So it should be a Weathered Runestone if I was playing a serious list.
So what is the difference? What does Weathered Runestone get you that Grafdigger's Cage misses?
The biggest thing is this was the ideology heading into it, and 4-color Omnath was one of the biggest decks. The way we lost was Genesis Ultimatum into Yugen, or something into Yugen. Anything into Yugen. And it stops Yugen. It stops the Genesis Ultimatum grabbing Planeswalkers. It only grabs lands. So it would just make it a ritual if there's already Lotus Cobras in play, but if they're doing that, you're probably winning the game anyway. But it just stops bigger tempo swings from 4-color Omnath.
I like that. I know we looked at the card when we were going through our spoiler season. We were kind of trying to figure out when that actually would be better than Gravedigger's Cage. I think that makes a lot of sense.
That's the only thing that's come up thus far. There are, like, minor things that I, like, thought about, but nothing that consistent to see enough play. Moving down the list again, Pithing Needle. Pithing Needle is basically there for Teferi 3 mana. It is the most problematic permanent for our deck. Bouncing lands or bouncing our Voracious Hydra that we put so much work into, we need to stop it. And it's also just a catch-all for other things, because Pioneer is a diverse meta, and you need to run silver bullets that cover a lot of bases, and that's when Pithing Needle shines its best. Dampening Sphere. Oh, go for it.
I was going to say, Pithing Needle better than Sorcerer Spyglass.
Mm-hmm. In this case, the reason that we kind of think about one mana versus two mana cards is the extra value worth it? And as a mono green planeswalker deck, you don't really have a lot of information needed. You're never really checking your opponent's hand consistently, so the one-time check just isn't really worth it for the one extra mana. Blast Zone is a consideration, but Blast Zone's not a widely played card in this format. The only decks that I think run it are like Team of Wreck and the World Tree deck, which we'll talk about later. It's just not worth the extra little bit of mana, essentially. Moving on to Dampening Sphere. That card is only there for Lotus. Lotus still needs to be respected because it's a deck that just shows up once in a while and will win a tournament, and then everybody will overboard for it.
Yep.
So if you just consistently have one Dampening Sphere in your board, you'll be able to always just get them when they show up.
Totally agree.
Heart of Kieran. Heart of Kieran is one of those cards that's like super interesting, and a lot of my friends, when I talk to them, dislike the card in the board. I think it's really important, and the reason I think it's really important is just it's the most consistent way that you can have just to protect your planeswalkers. It is always going to be there to protect a Karn or a Vivian. Going in on this with a Vivian too, of just putting a lot of counters on it, having it have flying and vigilance is really important to be able to attack and defend. Because you also need to, because a lot of the ways that this deck loses is Omnath or Uro, and it being a 4-4 going to a 6-6 consistently is just really important as a blocker. It eats a lot of the most relevant cards or most played cards in the format. It's also just the amount of time it also just has a lot of cute interactions. It also just makes all of your creatures have quote-unquote haste. So, like, playing a Voracious Hydra, you at least get to attack for 4. If you put a Planeswalker to play, you get to attack for 4. It's really good at applying consistent pressure, and that's the thing that's very underrated about vehicles in this deck, is it turns Llanowar Elves and other creatures in your deck into beaters. Like, real beaters, and with haste. So it's very good against control.
Yeah, I agree. I'm playing it in my Dwarves deck, but that's not what this topic is about today, so...
Oh.
Leave the Dwarves deck.
He's going to sneak it in anyway. Yeah. He's going to find some way to mention it.
Connor Mann and his Dwarves deck.
Yes.
I see that on stream all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I sent that to Ryan last night. I was watching
this morning.
The challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Connor Mann is a wonderful player, if you guys don't know, on the podcast. I think he showed up like a couple of times, so, or like once or twice. I have no idea.
Yeah, he was on...
Yeah, you know, we haven't had him on the show. I think I had... like talk to him on Twitter, you know, in some Pioneer related conversation, but I don't think I followed him until, you know, I ran into him. I was following Claudio's stream, and then we ran into him round one, and I was like, oh man, I'm gonna follow this this guy for the rest of the tournament, because I want to see what dwarves are doing, because Ryan's been raving about it so much. Totally off topic.
Anyways, continue.
A little bit of going off topic is always fine.
Yeah,
Ratchet Bomb is for auras, or just like the mono red deck, or burn or whatever. It's just really good at killing the one drops or sometimes the zero drops. So the starts that are the scariest from auras are the Stone Coil starts, and Ratchet Bomb is Fatal Push in that matchup. It just kills Stone Coil Serpent, which is the big deal. But it can also just kill the Hateful Eidolons. A deck that's been like not putting up consistent results that I was scared of at the time for this deck was Blue-White auras. And the reason that they were in blue was for cards like Curious Obsession and Staggering Insight. Which are both just draw card effects when they deal damage. So the emphasis on Stone Coil was really big. So that's why I threw the Ratchet Bomb in. It'll probably still stay there when I compete again. just because of the prevalence of auras. But I made sure that that card was in my board. That was the one I was not touching. But Ratchet Bomb's a flex slot if you expect auras. Aligned Hedra Network. Oh, unless you have a comment for it, go for it.
This is interesting.
No, keep that going.
Aligned Hedra Network. It removes everything that has CMC 5 or higher. Or it's not CMC 5, Power 5 or higher. That's Uro removal if it ever hits the battlefield. It's also just Niv removal, which is really important right now. So a lot of these cards, like that I touched on earlier, like Pithing Needle, they are cards that stop, like, so for example, if you just align Hedra Network, the board, with a Niv in play, it's not good enough, because your opponent can just Teferi, bounce your aligned Hedra Network, and now they get to draw whatever amount of cards, like, usually, Nivs hit on average 4 to 2, so they just get to draw 4 to 2 more cards, and you're just like, well, this was a good time. So you do need to start setting up combos like Pithing Needle for Teferi on 3, and then you need to set, then you can, are able to use your aligned Hedra Network. So it's a 2-turn thing with Karn. So you gotta, so aligned Hedra Network is a very much so a setup card. Something I also want to point out about this board is you have no good way of removing an Omnath that's in play. The board is really bad at that. There's not an artifact that can remove an Omnath. Consistently. There is Meteor Golem, but that card is I think it's Duty Diarrhea. I think that card is just not good.
Yeah, I had to use it in my dwarf stack, but I agree.
It's just not good. It is not good. Moving down the list, we got one of our first Kaldheim, or I guess we talked about Ruined Weatherstone. Eskia's Chariot. I think this card is the bee's knees. It is so good. It creates 2 blockers immediately, which is great value, but Karn upticking on an Eskia's Chariot to attack for 8, creating a 2-2, is insane. It's so good. And you also get to make cats. Cats are adorable. Just saying. A lot of value in this card. Again, it has the emphasis. It's a vehicle, so Karn upticking on it, creating value. So it's the same. It's the same thing like Sky Sovereign, which is deals 3 damage whenever it attacks. But this one's more so focusing on onboard things. The only tokens that you could make outside of the Chariot are Wolf tokens off Wolf Willowhaven, which comes up every once in a while. But the Chariot just creates more value. It's there for when you don't know what to wish for. You can just wish for a Chariot, and it's always pretty good. Yeah, I think that card is just the bee's knees. I think it's really good, and it's really underrated in Pioneer right now.
It's definitely been a sleeper, I think, from the set. One of the strongest cards that I don't think people called immediately.
Popular art, though.
Oh, it has great art. Oh, if the, also the promo. The promo makes the cat scary, which makes me a little bit more concerned.
Yeah, this one will be the most popular version.
Oh, of course. Orbs of Warding is your hate against burn in the mono red deck. Turning off their burn spells and turning their 1 dork creatures into like nothing is really important to stay alive. Because this deck, if your game plan against burn is to wish for an Orbs of Warding and then control the board from there, and then once you do that, you just win. So you just have to try to play out survive until game, which is really difficult because they always have Wild Slash. I think it's Searing Blood for your Elvish Mystic or Llanowar Elves. So you always just gotta, like, play a little bit of a longer game against burn, which is always really scary. If you don't finish the game at, like, 3 life, then that wasn't a good game. You know? Sky Sovereign Consul Flagship is your mid-range-y removal card. It's also really good in the mirror, because one of the things So Etron taught me that I love the card Karn the Great Creator and all of its tricks. And Pioneer, it has less tricks, but Sky Sovereign was one of the more popular cards in Etron, and I had to learn that card kills a down-ticked Karn. I learned that the hard way many of times. And that card just kills so many Planeswalkers 2 at once a majority of the time. And it also has the value of like making your creatures attackers the turn they come in. So the card just has a lot of inherent value in the matchup. And Karn upticking on a Sky Sovereign to make it a 5-5 flyer and just shooting down any small creatures on the board or Planeswalkers that have just downticked, like Teferi's, Narset's, Nahiri's sometimes even. Just so much value in this card.
Yeah, I really like Sky Sovereign.
Oh yeah, and you also have boat memes. Boat memes are the biggest thing. You need to have the good boat jokes. Godfarrow statue is what I call equivalent to Mycosynth Lattice in this format, if you are aware of it.
I like that comparison.
In Modern, there was a one card quote unquote combo where you could wish for Mycosynth Lattice and your opponent could no longer tap their lands or activate anything. If they had a creature, they could attack. That was about it. Godfarrow statue plays a similar role where you're trying to cast as fast as you can to lock out your opponent from the game. It nearly doesn't do exactly what Lattice does, but it makes them slow down significantly. The one damaged part sometimes comes up, but the fact that you can also just turn it into a 6/6 beater with Karn is really relevant.
What matchups are you bringing that in against again? Like control?
So the way you win the 4-color Omnath matchup is you kill their Llanowar Elf, or you kill their Lotus Cobra, and then you slam a Godfarrow statue, and they can just never recover, because that deck is also a snowball deck. You wish for it against any control deck, because making their counter spells 5 mana makes them always have to, like, hold them up if they ever have them, versus playing their threats. Again, it's another card that you kind of need to combo with Pithing Needle against Teferi, if that's something that's going to be happening.
But Kevin, you just wish for you it when said you it wasn't good. At least in my Dwarves deck, didn't you say it wasn't that good?
No, I thought it was okay. Good.
Someone else might have said
I think
it.
You'd played it and I stole it or something like that, and that was what was.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I'm stealing your thunder there, Ash.
No. This is your guys' podcast. Yeah. I'm just honored to be here, you know?
So, and really just anytime you're ahead, you can kind of close out
the game. Yeah, it helps the game plan of this deck, which is to create a big advantage early on and then steamroll from there. And that's just what this card does, is you just, you get to, they have to pay 2 more, which is just insane.
And I've been quiet over here. I've been trying to figure out what artifact is supposed to answer Omnath, because you gave
me that riddle earlier. You have Meteor Golem. That's about it.
So far, I've come up with Transmogrifying Wand, but that's rough.
All I'm saying is I have used that card once in Modern, and it is bad. It is real bad. So I don't think it gets any better in Pioneer. The Great Henge. The Great Henge is the second to last card. The Great Henge is just something that you wish for whenever you don't have something you're actively doing. So if you're just sitting there not doing a whole lot, you don't have, like, you have like a couple Llanowar Elves in hand, that just turns them into redraws, which is just the biggest thing. It gains 2 life whenever you tap it. It's pretty relevant against burn, because the play pattern that usually comes up against burn is you play your Karn, you Karn wish for Orbs of Warding, play the Orbs of Warding. And then you can Karn uptick on your, you can Karn, then you Karn downtick for the Great Henge. And then on the turn you want to cast the Great Henge, you Karn uptick on your Orbs of Warding, making it a 5/5, discounting your Great Henge by 5. And then you just spam the board with Llanowar Elves, drawing cards, making them 2/2s. And that'll close out the game. That's the play pattern I usually go for. But that card is just something that turns your Llanowar Elves, your Burning Tree Emissaries, your Llanowar Visionaries into redraws or double redraws in some cases. So you can just churn through your deck to try to find some way to close out the game, whether that be a Nissa, Karn the Great Creator, a Vorinclex, and just something. And then Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger is purely there for Vivian Arcbow Ranger. You're never bringing that card in. You just wish for it whenever it's relevant, and then you just exile 2 of your opponent's permanents. You make them cry. It's about it.
So, real quick question. As far as, you know, the sideboard, you pretty much keep the main board the whole time, right? You never need to, like, change anything.
That's right where I was going. So this is submit. You just click submit and take a 5-minute bathroom break?
With the version that I'm playing, yes. But there is a lot of players that do a different ideology than me. I like having lots of solo wish targets in my deck. But there are plenty of other players out there that I see packing like 3 Scavenging Ooze in their board to bring in when Llanowar Visionary or Voracious Hydra isn't good. Or Vorinclex. Like, so you'd bring in Scavenging Ooze. The player is Medvedev. I never know how to say his name. I always mispronounce it. So Medvedev. Respect to him. But he's the one that usually does the three stone coils thing, or like two Grafdigger's cages, what sometimes he plays, so you can also bring that in against Oops. He's very much so a metagame player and hates graveyards, apparently. But you would bring it in over Vorinclex in the burn matchup, and then you would bring it in over Voracious Hydra in the Sultai Uro matchup, or Sultai Rek matchup. But with my version, you sit there for a bit, you answer questions from Twitch chat, and you hit the submit button.
Perfect.
Before we get into like the matchups, I wanted to ask you how often or how many times you've had a Vorinclex in play and then played a Planeswalker.
In the challenge that I did well in, a couple of, I think it was twice against Burn, actually, that it happened.
What'd you do? What'd you cast after?
You
got something for free, right?
Of course. I don't think you're ready for how much value Vorinclex brings. I will go into the value of Vorinclex now, and I'll talk about that card, because that card changes a lot.
I've been raving about it, so let's get someone else saying some things here.
I'll talk first about how it synergizes with your deck, and then is a hate piece against your opponent's deck. I'll talk about our deck first. So, let's go say you live in the perfect world where you can play this on four. Four or three is usually where I average on, mainly four, though. So you're likely to already have one of your Planeswalkers in play. For example, let's just take Vivian in this case. So you already have Vivian at about 5 loyalty, let's say. Playing a 6-6 and then making it a 10-10 with Vivian, and Vivian goes to 6, goes to 7, 10-10 trample haste, that's the good stuff. Good. We like that. Playing a Vorinclex first, and then playing a Nissa Who Shakes the World, makes your lands 6-6s. You can ultimate Nissa Who Shakes the World instantly if you play it. It's a big thing to just deck thin and then have all these forests in play. Usually you make a land first, or if you have another Nissa, of course you can ultimate the first one because you don't care anymore. But making 6-6s is really relevant because that trades with Uro. That's insane. Your land, your forest trading with Uro is insane.
And if they're indestructible from the ultimate, then
you're just laughing your way to the bank. You're like, nice deck. Karn downticking every single time is insane. Because it'll come in with 10 if you already have the Vorinclex in play. But if you, that's just for example, live in the world you play Karn on 3 and then you play Vorinclex on 4. Being able to use Karn to uptick, then downtick immediately, because usually you would have to wait 2 turns, right? Because uptick, uptick, downtick, then you'll have enough to like balance it out so your Karn lives. Because Karn's is a +1 and then a -2. But with Vorinclex in play, it's a +2, -2. So every second turn, you're wishing for some powerful thing out of your board. You run out of them fast, but they're there.
Okay, so that's definitely something I'm interested in, because, you know, I had tested this, and I had tested something similar when we were just first brewing, and I was like, oh, well, we don't really need Karn if we've got Vorinclex, because he doesn't synergize, but like that there is some synergy. There is still some advantage to those two together.
So Vorinclex doesn't just synergize with the Planeswalkers. He also synergizes with Voracious Hydra. Now, I'm going to pose the question to you guys. When was the last time you've ever seen a 40-41 of Voracious Hydra?
I've never seen it, but I'm guessing I'm going to see it more often.
Oh, you're going to see it pretty often. Because,
see, like I said, I was testing this deck, so I had some, you know, like 3-digit Voracious Hydras.
They're big. I had a 40-41 against Burn, and then they just scooped it up because they didn't draw Chain of the Rocks. But let's just, for example, let's give it a mediocre. You casted it for 8, right? 8x is 8. You double it when it enters, so now it's 16. So do you want to fight something with 16 power? Sure. But if you want to double it and then double it again, you can, because that's how Vorinclex works. So you'll double the double. It's pretty insane. I'm pretty happy with it. So it's just basically x4, whatever you play it for. So in this case, it'll be, double.
16, 32.
Boom. Yeah. 32, 32. Yeah. Easy. Right there.
Wow.
It's insane. Oh. It is one of those snowball-y cards.
Well, it would be a, no, it'd be a 48 if you.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Doubles and yeah, you're yeah. right. You're right. You're right. Morning math. I'm tired.
Yep.
But yeah. So
the only one missing that this also sometimes has is with scavenging ooze that grows really fast.
Mm-hmm. Assuming there's a lot of things in the bin to eat, a lot of food for that ooze. Yeah. You'll grow your ooze pretty quick.
Some foos.
The last card in our deck is Stonecall Serpent, which I touched on the board. Anything over a 10/10, you're just having fun. But if you get it over a 10/10, you're golden. Card has trample. It just needs to be big enough to go.
Great Henge too.
The Great Henge, yeah, it has like some minor synergies. I haven't got to have that fun yet, sadly, but it does exist. It does exist. But making your various Hydras be removal spells a lot easier is really relevant.
So let's move on to matchups, if that's okay. So
yeah, sure.
I think there's a little bit more we can touch on the deck, sure? If that's
okay. Yeah. Like I said, I was going to quickly go over like the Vorinclex against your opponents.
Let them finish raving about Vorinclex, because I love all the things that Vorinclex shuts down.
I'm not
down,
even done yet.
I thought we were done. I didn't know there was more.
No, there's more.
Oh, no.
So the text that we haven't even talked about is your opponent's creature or your opponent's permanents get -1 or double or half with Vorinclex, right? So, the big examples are the big players in Pioneer, which is 3 mana Teferi. That's the biggest deal. With Vorinclex in play, it starts out at 2. So, it'll... And when Vorinclex is... with Teferi, it's an uptick for 1. So, what Vorinclex does is it'll make it up... It'll make it allow it to update... try to up its Planeswalker loyalty count. But it won't put a counter on it. So it can forever uptick, quote unquote, but never go down, but never gain anything. So it'll never be able to bounce a permanent of yours. It'll just be in play. Narset's one that's also popular in Pioneer. That just reads Impulse, but worse. You can only hit like non-creatures or non-lands or whatever. Because it comes in at 2 loyalty, right? 5 mana Teferi, it never gets to a downtick on anything. It only gets to draw cards, which is bad. But, like, you don't have to worry about it tucking any of your permanents. Nahiri enters at 2, which is another popular one. I've had it so where Blast Zone comes in at 0 counters. And so he wasn't able to kill my board of Llanowar Elves the turn of. And he died. So it has a lot of anti-synergies on your opponent's side. Like, for example, right now, with Kaldheim, one of the biggest things that were shown off, or one of the biggest mechanics in the set, was the Sagas. Yeah, they don't get any counters, so they don't get any triggers. They pay 3 mana for a Raven's Warning. No, it does nothing. No counters put on it. You don't ever have to worry about it.
Can't Elspeth Conqueror's Death it.
Yeah, Vorinclex doesn't get hit by Elspeth Conqueror's Death, which is a big thing.
Just because it never activates when it comes into play, you mean?
Yeah. So if it never gets the Saga counter, because Vorinclex will say half rounded down. So it'll just never get a Saga counter or whatever it's called. A lore counter, I think it is. It'll never get it. So it'll never trigger to exile the Vorinclex, which is insane.
Can't Ugin minus me.
I guess this sounds like it's pretty good against Poob then, right? Against Esper Yorion.
Yeah, it's the Esper Control deck. Esper Control has taken on a different style. It's been less of a Supreme Verdict, Wrath Your Board. They've more so moved into creatures, the people who continue to innovate on that deck. So they play cards like Skyclave Apparition, Agent of Treachery. So they can steal it, but they usually don't play a lot of like ECD effects anymore. I'm trying to brew a little bit in the Esper Control area right now, because I feel like a control deck in Esper exists that I haven't found yet. But we're still brewing. We're still got things in the works.
So before Ryan steals it with matchups, I wanted to talk just a little bit about some other variations that you can look at, just because. So I was wondering if there's any other Planeswalkers you've considered. Like, in particular, I wanted to look at Ugin, because Vorinclex plus Ugin is such a combo together. You know, you can ult him right away, find another Ugin if you've got him, or just find Planeswalkers. Is that considered, or is it just too expensive?
Are we talking about 6-mana Ugin here, or 8-mana Ugin?
I was talking about the 8-mana Ugin.
Okay. Well, 8-mana Ugin was talked about, but we all decided that this deck is a tempo-based deck, and having an 8-drop in your hand when this deck will sometimes play it on, I guess, turn 5, usually, about there. I'd say that's about average for that card. It just isn't consistent enough to be good, because when we're in play, when this deck is snowballing, it's also just turning Nissa Who Shakes the World. It turns their lands into creatures. And so if there's ever any counterplay from your opponent, you just you never have the chance to cast a Yugen. Yugen is a lot more of a win more card. I have, however, seen Yugen the Ineffable, which is the 6-mana one, which I think is like an okay version, because that card's a lot easier to tempo out than an 8-mana Yugen. 8-mana Yugen is definitely win more, and that card also screws over this deck a lot, because there's a lot of, you want all your permanents in play, and if you ever have to downtick the Yugen to try to save yourself, you lose a lot of your own tempo.
Mm-hmm.
That makes
there's
sense.
A lot of anti-synergy with big Yugen, but yeah. With small Yugen, you're creating card advantage. You're also able to remove a lot of the quote-unquote troubled permanents of Pioneer. There's not a lot of like colorless ones other than Stonecoil Serpent, which again, but this is a Planeswalker that actually like has some synergies with its ability, which is with the Karn. You're able to cast a 2-mana Karn and then grab like a Ratchet Bomb for free, Heart of Kieran for free. It also can kill Omnath, which is a big deal.
Yeah, apparently, things that
kill Omnath is a big deal for this deck, because this deck does not have... It has 8 technically, or 7 in my list, but you do need ways to kill Omnath in that matchup.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other Planeswalkers you've tried in this deck,
or that are worth trying? With Vorinclex, I originally was trying Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, but that card is just super underwhelming. There has been talk about... I think it's Garruk Unleashed, I want to say? It's the one that downticks to make a beast, and then it gains a counter if you have, like, if your opponent has more creatures than you.
So I think that's a... that's the most recent
I think that's Garruk Unleashed,
it?
I'm not sure. Anyway, it's the one where it's the one where you can, like, make a... Or sorry, it's -2 is make a beast, but make an additional one, and or sorry, I don't know. But anyway, we were trying that one.
If they control
one.
More creatures than you, make a second one.
Yeah. We were trying that one because it was really interesting, the fact that it was, like, gaining count, or like it was really interesting that it was like it had a really good ult, if I remember correctly, and being able
ultimate is you get an emblem with at the beginning of your end step, you can search your library for creature, put it on the battlefield, and shuffle your library.
So it was more consistent Vorinclex. It was a lot more of a win more card, but the issue we came into is it had the same issue that Vivian Arcbow Ranger does, is where sometimes its uptick does nothing. So it's just not a good standalone card, and it needed a lot more synergy, and it needed a lot more setup with Vivian. So it just became a battle of these two cards do the same thing, but one thing does it better. So it just ended up not making the cut. Karn Scion of Urza was another one we talked about. There's just not enough artifacts for it to be good enough. Yeah. And the card draw is like menial. It's not like super good card draw. So we just ended up not playing that. Other than that, Yugen the Ineffable I touched on earlier, there were some lists playing it. I think it's like a pretty fine card to be playing in the right meta. If you need to be playing a lot more of a mid-rangey value-based deck, or sorry, meta, it's a good one. And yeah, that's about really it for the Planeswalkers that I would ever consider for this deck.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just one more thought, just because you were talking about how good Vivian is with Vorinclex. Is there any consideration to putting a Vorinclex in the sideboard to grab with Vivian?
So the reason that Karn is really good is because we can have a lot of single target wish targets. One of the things that was original, because Mono Green Planeswalkers has existed in Pioneer ever since inception. It's gotten multiple bans. It's like Leyline of Abundance was the first one. Oath of Nissa was the second, I guess, and technically Walking Ballista now was one of the bans for it. But we got Oath of Nissa back. But going back to your question, putting more creatures in the board for Vivian often doesn't get to -5. If it ever gets to -5, it's gonna we're probably already pretty ahead, or we just don't have anything we're doing. If we don't have anything we're doing, Stonecoil Serpent's just a catch-all. It's something you can play at any point. Having one slot in the board is really important, because this deck really cares about its sideboard. Because you have so many different wish targets. You want to try to hit different things, and you gotta... The sideboard slots are really important, is what I'm trying to get at.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting, because, you know, it is like 13 hits for Karn and... Or 14 hits for Karn and 2 for Vivian. So, but it does make sense that you'll be down-ticking Karn a lot more than you'll be -5-ing Vivian.
Yeah, like this deck originally ran like Voracious Gearhulk in the board, right? I think we brought up that a little bit earlier. But I cut that card because I found that Stolen Coil Serpent was a wish target that was consistently good whenever you wished for it. And so there's just no reason to run a mid-rangey creature for value with Vivian when you could just run Stone Coil Serpent and catch every scenario decently well and then still have good wish more that would free up more wish targets for Karn.
See, I'm so greedy, I would just be thinking like, oh, but I get eight counters with Vorinclex.
Yeah, that means you get one down there. That means you get to threaten Mr. Ulamog there.
Yeah.
Always having Ulamog as a threat with Vivian is just the biggest deal. Because everyone, there's not a lot of ways in this format you can remove a Ulamog once it comes into play, and just eating two things is really good.
Yeah. So you guys ready now to move on to some matchups?
I'm down.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
So yeah, so tier one, you know what we have, what, Niv-Mizzet right now, and Burn, and what are the other tier one decks?
Four-Color Omna, and of course the Mono Green Planeswalkers deck as well.
Okay, so let's start with those. How does the deck match up against those? Like, as far as, can you give us like a percentage maybe, you know? And
you know. With a new meta, I can give my best guess, but it's always going to be a little bit off.
That's a whole conversation here, Ryan. I'd be fine with these are my good, these are my bad.
Okay, that's fine.
I will do my best. Let's just go down the Goldfish page and talk about which ones are relevant as of right now. The Wilderness Wreck decks, it depends on which one you're against. If you're against Team Wreck, that matchup is unwinnable. You are so infinitely small against that deck, because the things that this deck struggles against are Counterspell decks and Mass Board Wipe decks. Mass Board Wipe decks and Counterspell decks are both Team Wreck. Team Wreck is, and it also is a combo deck. I would call Team Wreck a combo deck. It's a one-card combo deck, or technically two. Wilderness Wreck, lands in play, expansion explosion. So you always have the threat of dying to that. Plus, they also play Anger of the Gods or Sweltering Suns. Plus, they also play Censor, Mystical Dispute, Sinister Sabotage sometimes. And so you're just you're pretty small in that matchup. You don't have a horse in that race, just because they're always able to counter your relevant threats, and they're also able to control the board, so you never have a chance to snowball. There's 0%. Saltyrek, however, is a better matchup, in my opinion, than Team Wreck, because you are able to try to play more of like a control mid-range game with them rather than trying to just puke your hand into play. But you just always have to have threats. You always have to have a follow-up threat. Or you can set up for a turn where you play two threats in a turn. For example, you would bait a counterspell with a Voracious Hydra and then play a Karn. So you need to try to set up that for the best way you can. And if they ever just miss on a counterspell, you win. You usually win. If it's a Karn you get to get into play, cool. You're laughing your way to the bank. Because Karn has multiple threats in itself. I would say in Saltyrek it's still unfavored, but it's a lot better than Team Wreck.
It's closer. Better.
Yeah. It just goes the Wilderness Wreck decks, they're, again, counter decks and board control decks. So it's really rough. It's really rough. Mono Green Planeswalkers was really interesting as a mirror. Of course, it's like a 50-50 thing because of the mirror, but I was the first person kind of to like put, I tweeted about Vorinclex, and I put deck lists out there before the first challenge weekend, and a lot of people weren't running Vorinclex. And so when I showed up in the mirror, I slammed a turn three Vorinclex. And I can tell you that my opponent played a Nissa Who Shakes the World, had two loyalty counters, made a 1-1 elemental. I played a Nissa Who Shakes the World, came in with 12 loyalty counters.
Hilarious.
Made a 6-6. We can take a solid guess who won that game.
Yeah.
But the matchup becomes a lot more of a trying to control the board. If you can get a Voracious Hydra on 3 to kill your opponent's Planeswalker, or to kill your opponent's Llanowar Elves, you're laughing your way to the bank. Because you just disrupted your opponent and progressed the board. Ooh, those are the good times. And then your Karn wish targets mean so much in this matchup. There's a lot of meaningful decisions in this matchup. It is one of the most, I think it's one of the most interesting mirrors within all of Pioneer. Moving down the list again to Four Color Omna. That matchup, I have tested the four. So my friend P-Tarts qualified for the Mox Showcase, if you guys are aware of what that is. So it's 24 players, all who top 8 in an event. It's around, I would say, 150 players, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And they all top 8, and then they got put into their own tournament to see who would win that event to qualify for the MOX, which is, like, a big tournament. It's the one that, what was his name? MJ won recently?
Yeah,
it was MJ. Yeah. We were doing a bunch of deck prep because we wanted to play 4-color Omnath, and we had to test the Mono Green Planeswalkers deck because we thought that would be the most represented deck. And in that testing, 4-color Omnath Mono Green Planeswalkers got like a 65% win rate against 4-color Omnath, which is interesting because I brought up earlier the fact that you need ways to kill Omnath, and we don't have a lot. But Mono Green Planeswalkers is the deck that disrupts them the best while still applying consistent pressure. So this matchup is really good for you if you know what you're looking for. You are looking for something that can close the game, like a Nissa or a Karn. You also need something to disrupt a Lotus Cobra or an Omnath, which is Vivian or Voracious Hydra. Vorinclex doesn't do a lot in this matchup, other than trade with Uro. But it does, but the deck does already just have a good matchup against 4-color Omnath, I would say.
Is that all the tier ones you think, or how about Niv?
I got Niv and Burn still left to talk about.
Oh yeah.
And there's also an up and comer, which is White Red Heroic. It won the challenge yesterday.
I didn't get to the end of that. I went to bed before the challenge ended. Mm-hmm.
I think the finals was Traft on Spirits and Bacchettina on Heroic.
Traft has been good on that Spirits
deck. Oh, yeah. Well, Traft is just a really good player. He understands that tech to such a high extent. But bringing us back, Burn. I think Burn is a pretty 50-50. You are either winning that game by a lot or you're losing that game by a lot. Close matchups happen every so often, and those matchups are the really interesting ones. The matchup basically gets decided on how many early burn spells they have to expel on your Llanowar Hells. If you're able to stop them from playing their Monastery Swift Spheres or their Soulscar Mages, you're doing pretty well. Because if you're on the play and you turn one Llanowar Elves, then the only thing that they can answer it with is a Wild Slash. So you just need to try to force them to control the board so that they're not developing their own board, if that makes sense. I think that matchup is like relatively close. Chain of the Rocks is something you always have to be concerned about. Voracious Hydra is just really good in that matchup. Something I learned about Vorinclex in this matchup is that it's half the counters that Soulscar Mage gives.
Which is
interesting because I was able to value block a Soulscar Mage with my opponent salting off in chat that he didn't understand how the card worked. That was a good one. He tried to Wizard's Lightning my Vorinclex when I blocked, and it only gave it -1/-1 instead of -3/-3, and so I just got to just eat it.
And nice.
He was upset, but that's okay.
I think that's gonna happen a lot to people over the next few weeks or so as we figure out these new cards.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of weird ones.
There is
a lot of cards in the set had a lot of weird
interactions, weird things.
A lot of text.
Yeah. Niftalite's an interesting one. I have had a lot of success against it. It really depends. Like, I have had success against everyone but Claudio. Claudio manages to beat me every single time I play against him. But
oh yeah.
other than Claudio, I think I have a pretty good win rate.
And a lot of these matchups, you know, I've heard, I think, the other people talking about them. You know, we've had a lot of people on talking about these decks, and a lot of times it's like, yeah, you know, that Mono Green Planeswalkers, as long as they don't go elf into exploding the game off. So it sounds like, you know, the snowbally hands, like you're saying, with Mono Green Planeswalkers do really run over a lot of these decks. They just can't catch up.
If,
you know, Niv-Delight, they're doing things on 3-4, and you're already to the races by then.
Yeah. I think the biggest issue with this deck is sometimes its consistency. The consistency can be what kills you sometimes, but so one thing I wanted to bring up is you're never seeing the same person doing consistently well with Mono Green Planeswalkers, because the deck often just loses to itself, because sometimes you're mulliganing, so you gotta mulligan pretty aggressively for a hand with like a dork, or like something to do, something to work towards, And so you'll be mulliganing to like 6-5 pretty consistently. And sometimes the deck will just lose to itself because you mulled to 5 with 2 Llanowar Elves and some bit of ramp with nothing to work towards because you were kind of forced to, because you can't really mull to 4 in this format. That's unless you're Oops. Yeah. Unless you're Oops. You can do whatever you want if you're Oops. But in that deck, you cannot because you're a tempo deck. And sometimes you just die because you didn't draw your good cards. And, well, here we are. But the deck does have, like, the deck does have the potential to beat anything, but the potential to lose to yourself pretty consistently. It's a very...
Yeah.
It's a deck that can, like, take the meta by storm, or it's a deck that will just die off because you didn't... It mulled.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is interesting. Is, you know, this is one of the most popular decks in Pioneer, but I haven't seen any... You haven't said any so far that you're like, oh yeah, we absolutely stomp against, you know, blank.
Because there's always the fail rate of the deck. This deck, I think, has the highest fail rate of its on itself in any deck in Pioneer. Rather, or I would put Auras into the question in Oops, but Mono Green Planeswalkers has the biggest fail rate. But it is the deck that has game against everything, but also is bad against things. Because it's the inherent nature of the deck. You're either winning the game by a lot or you're losing by a lot. It's not a lot of in-between. But the in-between games are the ones
if you're playing Oops, game. You're playing it for the fail rate, basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can see that. That makes a lot of sense.
Quickly, the Heroic deck, it's popping up a lot. That matchup is not favored. Not whatsoever. Your Voracious Hydra has zero attacks in that matchup because they're just going to give it either God's Protection or Titan Strength. And you're just like, well, this is awkward.
Huh.
Voracious Hydra.
So in that matchup, do you want to just make your Voracious Hydra double your counters and just assume that they've got it?
If there's open mana, you don't take the risk. It's not worth it.
Okay.
Because you don't want to just 2-for-1 yourself. It's not. It's not where you want to be. You got a goldfish really well. That's all you have to do. You just goldfish and hope that you can goldfish faster, which doesn't happen that often, but it can. It can. But yeah, those are about what I think the matchups are within the. Pioneer with the most played decks currently. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well,
I have an important question. If you don't have any,
go for it.
So, okay, I mean, this is a fun question. How do you feel about the fact that they always lump Mono Green Planeswalkers together with Mono Green Aggro in, you know, like MTG Goldfish and a lot of other deck sites?
It's like semi annoying because I'll be like, all right, which one's the deck I care about in the Goldfish dump? This one, damn it, 50-50, didn't get there. Next one. But usually I can tell based on what the player is, because Ivan, I forget what his full name is, but, he's a very popular Brazilian player. He was, one of the leaders in Pioneer, I think, like, 2 seasons ago? But he consistently plays that deck. He's very popular within the Brazilian scene. He tells a lot of his friends to play that deck, so you see it a lot on late night queues. You see that deck consistently on late night queues. But yeah, that deck just, it's really annoying, but like...
Because it's not at all the same deck. And
well, you do what you gotta do, you know? You click through and find the good decks. I think that deck, by the way, is pretty poo-poo. I think that the mono-green stompy deck is pretty poo-poo. But right, I've lost it before, so...
you know, you did warn us about swearing on the show, so so thank you.
I got you. I say poo-poo. That's my, because I used to work as, like, a swim instructor, so I always had to call kids goobers, because I couldn't call them what I wanted to. Because that's frowned upon, so I had to call them goobers. So I found, like, little things to get around swearing.
So we've been talking about, like, you know, the good and the bad matchups and stuff like that, and my next question was going to be, like, what kind of green card or even artifact card would you like to see printed in the future to kind of help those matchups?
Something that kills Omnath. That's my first thing. Something that kills Omnath, that's good.
So like a better Hedron thing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the issue with this deck is Aethergust. Uh-huh. Aethergust plays really well against this deck. So I played a lot of 4-color Omnath. Because I decided that before that I played a lot of Esper Control, and Esper Control was dying. I was the only one that was putting up consistent results with it. So I was like, you know what? What if I play a good deck? And so I started playing 4-color Omnath, and in the board, a lot of people were playing Tireless Tracker, which I thought was really bad, because that card got gusted. It was your anti-control card. And so I started playing Nuzahal, which, by the way, you're welcome. Now you get to make dinosaur noses when you play my four color Omnath. You're playing one of my lists. But there's not a good card that just doesn't get gusted, other than like your wish targets and Karn. That's about it. If there is more cards that were like if there was some sort of counterplay around Gust that's not Veil of Summer, because Veil of Summer is obviously too powerful. Like, I think Autumn's Veil is something that's like pretty powerful that could also just be pretty okay in Pioneer. Autumn's Veil just says what Veil of Summer says, but without drawing a card. Yeah. So, like, you could at least, like, have some counterplay. Something that can... Yeah, that's just really it. I think Gust is just, like, such a problem for this deck. Because, like, you paying 5 mana for your Nissa in your entire turn because you can't attack with your Llanowar Elves just to get Gusted is just the worst feeling.
Yeah.
So something that has some counterplay around Gust and then this deck is pretty good. Because, like, that's the reason your Team Iraq versus Wilderness Rat matchups are just not good. Because they're just gusting you and you're not progressing anything. You're not drawing more cards. You're not... You're just there. You just exist. Time
walked again.
Yeah. The amount of times where I've just managed to get gusted 3 turns in a row, and I'm like, Vivian, gust? Sure. Vivian, gust again. You got it, buddy.
Struggle
okay.
is real.
Okay, what do you... What's the goal here? And then you just
need
die.
You need a green Teferi or something like that.
Yeah, some sort of like... You don't inherently need like card draw, but you just need something to say, stop messing with me. Let me snow roll. Let me kill you. Please let me kill you. Thank you. I would appreciate that. But that's about what I'd want to say.
So last question before we wrap this up.
Of course.
You know, you've been playing, you know, a lot of Pioneer over the last few weeks, and that's one of the reasons, you know, I've been following you on Twitter. And, you know, you said you were kind of excited where Pioneer was at. So can you get kind of expound on that or give us some more detail on your thoughts on the current meta or the developing meta? Yes.
Of course. So in the short term, we've only had 3 challenges. One's currently happening. But what we are seeing is Kaldheim was a set that didn't create a lot of new decks, which is sad. But it is building on old archetypes. Like, for example, Black-Red Arcanist died. It died in this format. But it's slowly making a comeback purely because of the pathway. Because the issue with that deck was just its mana base.
Mm-hmm.
You were awkward with playing like Castle Lochwain and Dragon Skull Summit with the Shadows of Rinderstrad Showlands. And so there was just a lot of inherent anti-synergies within the deck when it comes to its mana.
Dragon Skull Summit always looked really bad in that deck.
Oh, it always did. But now you're playing like pathways to have more consistent untapped mana, which just makes the deck inherently powerful again. Pro Japanese player, he goes by Trios Gunmoto, got a top 8 finish in the same challenge that I did. The deck is, I think that's one of the only newer cards that it ended up running, but I still think it was like a super interesting thing. The Raven's Warning. I want to talk about the Raven's Warnings. I think that card is the bee's knees. I think that card is so cool. I'm pretty popular within the Pioneer meta. And I was late night grinding with Mono Green Planeswalkers, and I ran into Fast Fake's friend playing the Jeskai Lupa deck, which is a popular again in the meta. And he was playing a playset of Raven's Warning and a playset of Eska's Chariot in the main. It turned into a 4 color deck, and I went, whoa, that's pretty cool. And the cards that he was getting with the Raven's Warning were like, I got Karn's Temporal Sundering. And for those who don't know, you get to take an extra turn and bounce something.
Yep.
He bounced his own Yorion and created so much value, and I just died. The card is legit, I think. I saw Claudio playing it in Niv the other day, and that card was... He was in the mirror, and he wished for an Ashiok Dream Render against his opponent.
Oh, God, I was watching that match where it went to... yeah, so he won by milling out, right?
I was in the Discord call with the opponent when that happened. Because we were just talking, and we were all playing our matches, and we were just having a good time as friends, and I'm just like, he cycles 2 triumphs to put his deck count from 12 to 10, and Claudio had 7 at that point, and I'm like, I'm not sure you should be cycling, and he goes, nah, we're fine, and I'm like, okay. And then he gets billed for 4 and dies to decking, and I'm like, you shouldn't have done it. And he just told me to shut up because he was upset.
Yeah. Shit. Claudio was pretty five-head. You know, he put the card on top, and I was expecting him to cycle his own Triumph to pick it up. But no, he's like, no, I've got to wait an extra turn, get that Ashiok in play for the full value.
Oh, yeah. Claudio's really smart.
Nuts.
He got my shout-out to Aplap. Aplap, you're hearing this. You got absolutely pooped on by Claudio.
Why don't we wrap it back towards Mono Green here? Because, you know, we're already about an hour in the show. Mm-hmm. That's about what we usually
go. Course,
so want to hear, you know, your last thoughts, anything that you think the deck is going towards in the future, any big reasons why you'd pick this?
The big reason you pick this is because you have an early challenge and you don't really want to think. Because this deck is just a super snowball-y deck. But if I'm being quite honest, or being super serious, this deck is super rewarding to know wish targets, and it's super great for metagaming. If you know your expected meta, you can build your board to whatever you choose. And so this deck has a lot of like decision patterns with Karn the Great Creator, which is just something I personally enjoy. Karn the Great Creator is my favorite card in all of Magic, and it is what I think is like a top 10, top 5 even, most skill intensive cards, because you can tell a good player from a bad player versus how they play Karn the Great Creator. Because that card has so many decision points. I think that this deck is the best Karn the Great Creator deck in Pioneer, so it draws me in. And you get to metagame really well. The play patterns, you get to... it's not the most difficult thing to understand, because you want to try to temple out. You want to ramp, big planeswalker, die. That's all you want to do. You want to kill your opponent fast.
I can't wait for Paper Magic to start up again, because I want to see like you and I want to see Claudio, you know, playing in paper these decks, and it's just going to be insane.
You'll see me at GPs starting when this kind of comes up. I'm from Edmonton, which just means that I am literally in the middle of nowhere when it comes to GPs. I am nowhere, nothing. So I'll have to travel a lot, but you'll see me within the paper scene. But traveling back to your comment about us being in paper again. One thing that also is great about this deck is you get to do the Karn the Great Creator trick, which is on turn 3, you just get to go through your sideboard and your opponent's like, oh, he has Karn. And then you just play a Vivian. I don't have Karn in my hand, I just play a Vivian. Oh, it's so fun. Or you guys haven't realized yet, I don't know if this was ever brought up, but we haven't played with companions in paper yet.
Oh, I know.
So, a lot of people will shuffle in their companions, and game 2, they'll be like, where's my Yorion? Where did it go?
Oh, no.
Where's my Lurrus? Or they'll just forget to reveal it in games 2 and 3, and they'll just be like, Judge, please help.
Nice.
Oof. Oh, yeah. Paper meta versus online meta is very different.
Yeah.
Very different. So, because you get the luxury of Modo reminding you, hey, you got this in your board, by the way. the only thing you really got to remember is count your sideboard before you start playing. Make sure you have 15 cards in your board. It comes up a lot. Make sure you didn't shuffle in your Tormod script. You don't want to have an opening hand with Tormod script.
Is that still a big thing in Japan, Ryan? That they kind of present their 15 cards?
I mean, that's how I learned to do it over here. So I always do that. And it's become like a really good habit, you know, just so, you know, you don't lose that game, especially in competitive.
It does seem like a good tool.
Mm-hmm. Huh. That's something that I don't think I've ever seen, really. My one judge, level 2 judge friend does it. That's about it. I don't really say anything.
I mean, I did it. I remember when I did it when I was visiting the USA back home, and I'm like, you know, here's 15 cards in my sideboard, and they're like, whatever.
Yeah, it's not a thing here. It is not whatsoever. At least, yeah.
All right, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show here. Let's do some quick shout-outs and links. So, guys, if you enjoyed this kind of content, if you want to hear more from us, you can follow at MTG Pioneer is the best place to reach us. You can also find a link to our Discord there. It's a great place to hang out, to talk about Pioneer decks, to message us about what you thought about the show, anything similar to that. Ryan?
You guys can find me on Twitter as well, at Yoshwenky, Yoschwenky. And, you know, we're going to try to keep the Pioneer content, you know, coming at you. We'll be retweeting streams and deck lists and stuff like that, so be sure to follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, so if you're a streamer as well, make sure to shout out to us. We love watching content. I'm always finding anytime there's somebody streaming Pioneer on Twitch, I'm watching. Yeah, so let me know and I'll tweet it out to our followers, and good place to get some pickup. So Ashiok?
I am Dreams of Ashiok on Twitter. My Moto handle is also Dreams of Ashiok on Twitch. You can catch me whenever there's a challenge or a prelim late at night. That's me. I'm Ashiok Nightmare Weaver on Twitch. I try to play a lot of decks. I play a large variety because I like seeing what the meta's like and I like having fun. I'm also just brewing pretty consistently. A lot of bad decks, but they sometimes turn into good things, you know? That's about it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate these kind of, you know, deep dives on some of the big decks of the format. We really liked your insights here. I think I learned a lot about the deck. Hopefully our listeners did as well, but really appreciated. Any other shout outs you have to anyone you want to thank?
I'd like to thank the Moto, my friend group, the MTGO Cabal. We are a group of Moto grinders or streamers with notable names, Doomwake, Twinless Twin, Gasman48, and myself. Someone I want to also give a shout out to is P-Tarts. P-Tarts to win. We test a lot. He's the person that also runs the Cabal. We're starting to run a lot more tournaments. For example, one we just ran a couple days ago was we played Modern, but we unbanned Faithless Looting, Microsynth Lattice, and Mox Opal. We plan on bringing a lot of content like that. And we also plan on doing stuff with Pioneer at some point. But for right now, we're sticking with Modern. So you could see some Pioneer. We've talked about Pioneer, but just the 5 Fetchlands banned. We were very interested to see if the newer cards ever since Pioneer's Deception would change any of the meta. And that's really it. Shout out to P-Tarts.
Make sure to use that hashtag MTG Pioneer from now on whenever you put out that content.
Of course, of course. I'll always make sure to put out MTG Pioneer. I'm really bad at Twitter. I'm really bad at it.
I feel you. I wasn't on it until this podcast. All right, guys, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate all of you out there who love Pioneer content, and we look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. Your first Pioneers podcast is signing off.